So this is the not so obvious toxic top 10. Maybe some will be obvious to you, but hopefully I've enlightened you and opened up your eyes a little bit. I'm Kurt Perkins. They sought me out. I do quite a bit with Natural Grocers. I'm one of their preferred providers. So they had someone who practices yoga here that apparently goes to many of my workshops and says, you have to go get Dr. Kurt. And so they approached me and said, would you do something like this for our base? And so I opened it up to my people too, and so we got a group here tonight. What I do is functional chiropractic and lifestyle medicine. What drives me, like what my passion is just like any material, is to create more health and less healthcare, because we'll talk about that quite a bit. But what kind of what makes my heart sing is helping good people out of bad situations. And the bad situation I see most people, and this is probably just because this is the realm I work in, is that they have a condition and their condition is being managed no different than hospice care. So if you look at the way hospice care works, the way that healthcare system works, it's pretty much the same way. It's the same outcomes. So hospice, meaning they want to make you comfortable as your terminal, our healthcare system does no different. So you talked about high blood pressure, high cholesterol. Great, we want to numb you to that so you can keep going without feeling the effect. It could be autoimmune, it could be thyroid, it could be arthritis, it could be whatever. It's still the same procedure, but their outcome is never health. And we're coming into an election year, and healthcare is always going to be one of the biggest hot buttons. And you're going to hear rhetoric over and over again of who should pay for it. I'm waiting for a candidate to actually say, forget who's paying for it, what are we actually paying for? And kind of buck the system a little bit that way. I don't know if we're gonna have a candidate like that. I don't care what side of the fence they're on, but that's who I'm looking for someone to support politically is, great, let's stop wasting this money and stop forcing people to spend stuff on poor health outcomes. So that's kind of the lead into what we'll be talking about tonight. I found a nice quote, "The Paradox of Our Age" by the Dalai Lama. Says we have bigger houses but smaller families, more conveniences but less time, more degrees but less sense, more knowledge but less judgment, more experts but more problems, more medicines but less healthiness. We've been to the moon and back but have trouble crossing the street to meet the neighbor. We built more computers to hold more information, to produce more copies than ever, but have less communication. We have become long on quantity but short on quality. These are times of fast food but slow digestion, tall man but short character, steep profits but shallow relationships. It's a time when there's much in the window but nothing in the room.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
And so I think he points out a few of these not so obvious toxicities that we're constantly bombarded with that I want to harp and roll on. I think the one statement that I want to judge, or not judge, but unpack mostly is this more knowledge but less judgment. That's where I kind of got the more health, less healthcare tagline from, was that kind of inspired that. So more knowledge, less judgment. You're gonna, for some reason, with our healthcare system, we have more technologies, more access, more all these types of interventions, but we don't have more health outcomes. So I say, let's go back to if we're all a bunch of gardeners, and here's a wilting plant. You guys have the knowledge, but do you have the sense to repair a wilting plant? So if the leaves are brown, they're falling off, what's the first thing you would do to try to revive this plant?
Water.
Right. Maybe it needs
check
some
the water.
Right. So something with water. Maybe it needs some water. Does it have the appropriate amounts?
It might actually have too much water.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
In
so
that,
you're
in
gonna.
In that case, they're not brown, but in that case.
Yeah. So you're gonna assess. Here's a required nutrient, a required function for a plant. Let's assess that. Why wasn't your first instinct, let's paint the leaves green? Why wasn't it, let's stick some sticks up and tie the leaves to it so it stands up nice and tall?
We'd have done that.
Because you used your knowledge and you used sense with it. If this were a human that's wilting, we assess it and say, hey, it doesn't have enough chemicals, let's add those. Or it's got too many body parts, let's start removing those.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we were born short on chemicals and long on body parts. Now, where research gets into it, you had asked before we started here, what do I feel about Lipitor? Now, it doesn't matter what I feel about Lipitor, but we're going to take how they judge Lipitor with this wilting plant. So we're going to set up a study. So we're doing this double-blind randomized control study. So half of you are going to get the real intervention. The other half are getting a fake one. So you guys over there, you get real water. You guys here get fake water. And we're going to study it for 8 weeks long and see if that plant gets better. At the end of 8 weeks, who got better?
Well, the real water, for sure, right?
Yeah. Depends how you define better, right?
Well, I guess, yeah.
Because what if the plant is still wilting at the end of 8 weeks?
Dosage might have to be adjusted. Maybe you took that into account.
Potentially. Say you got the appropriate water, we didn't overwater, we didn't underwater.
And it's still...
It's still wilting. What would your conclusion be?
Maybe it needs fertilizer.
Maybe it needs something else.
Sunlight.
Yes. Plants don't just need water, they need these other things. In health or in like traditional research, they would look at the end of their study and be like, hey, this plant is still wilting. We gave it real water. Our conclusion is that water is either no good for wilting plants or it's dangerous for the wilting plant. And anyone that prescribes real water to wilting plants is not practicing evidence-based intervention. And so you see these headlines come across the newspaper. Vitamin whatever is going to be dangerous. And so they're studying in a limited paradigm. But you guys use more health or use more knowledge and use your sense with it. So it needs something else. So now we have to add another intervention. So we have the water, you said sunlight. So now we need four groups. So you guys get real water, real sunlight. You guys get real water, fake sunlight. You guys get fake water, real sunlight, and you get fake. Sorry.
Story of my life.
Yeah. Oh.
That's why she's taking judo, because it takes care of everything.
Yeah. So at the end of our 8 weeks, we look at this plant. Who got better?
I want to believe.
Well, for 67%, the ones that got sunlight and the right amount of water. And the other percentage is still missing the nutrient.
Right. So you could delineate whichever got something real, had that proportion got better. But again, how are we defining better? Is it less wilting or is it we established a requirement?
Yeah.
So, say that again, less wilting or what?
So we got to define better. Is it less wilting? So say less symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Or is better meaning you were deficient in something and we provided that requirement?
Good question.
Right. And so that's going to be dependent on your paradigm. For health, health is based on providing sufficiency of what you need and making sure you're keeping out what you don't need. So purity. So sufficiency and purity are the two modes of creating health. The easiest way to create ill health, disease, illness is to allow toxicity in and to create deficiency. So not enough nutrients, not enough soil, not enough sunlight. So at the end of our 8 week study, we still have a wilting plant. We got two of the three requirements. So let's add the third requirement. So now we have to have nine groups. And so we have real, fake, real, fake, real, fake, all the way down to fake. The end of our study, plant still wilting. Who got better?
Well, some got better, but now we have to worry about the bugs in the soil.
Right, you're using sense. Maybe there's something else that's happening that... So we've provided sufficiency. We've added everything we can that this plant requires. Or for humans, we've added everything that our DNA requires. But maybe there's something coming in that it doesn't require that's harmful, that's dangerous.
Maybe I'm not talking nice to it every day.
Maybe not. Maybe the janitor's dumping diesel fuel in the soil every night when we're not in there. And so... Adding sufficiency, starting that road to health, adding sufficiency is going to be the easier step. The toxicity part is the harder thing to uncover, to unpack, to realize, to kind of quantify how it's impacting everyone else. Because it can be a physical toxicity, it could be a chemical toxicity, it could be an emotional toxicity, it could be a social toxicity, it could be a spiritual toxicity. All aspects of life can either be detrimental or can be beneficial. And so that's these not so obvious ones that hopefully this sheds some light on where you might be going after. So a toxin. The definition, at least the one I like, is a substance which physical or energetic that places a stress or challenge to the physiological systems of the body and whose net effect at a given time is inflammatory, poisonous, depleting, in or disrupting to the harmonious function of the whole person. In other words, something that doesn't do a whole body good. I think the part I want to key on is this harmonious function of the whole person. What regulates and coordinates your life experiences? What, like, anatomical structure, what system in your body?
The heart?
Nope.
The brain?
Yes, your nervous system. And so your nervous system you can kind of divide it into two ways to organize life. Protection and growth. So if you're out hiking and a bear pops out, what side of life do you think you'd reside more on?
Protection.
Protection, right. If you come home and there's 5 dozen flowers, there's a bunch of balloons, and your spouse says, hey, we got two tickets to a Mediterranean cruise, what side of life do you think you're going to express in that point? If you enjoy those things.
Well, protection if you use your credit card.
True.
Well, I guess I'd have to be on the growth side, because that's part of living, is having something new in your life.
Right. So essentially, one is going to put you on happy side of life. The other side is going to put you on an unhappy side of life. Which one is better to be on?
Well, everybody wants to be on a happy side of life, because I think that's what makes people grow, is happiness.
But it depends on the situation.
Yeah. Bingo, it depends on the situation. Because if you're out hiking and that bear pops out,
I don't want to grow.
Are you gonna give that bear a nice handshake, nice to meet you, hug around the shoulder?
Depends on the individual.
Yeah. Maybe if you're medicated enough, then you're like, hey, maybe he's an old bear, maybe he's already full, maybe his teeth have fallen out, you got nothing to worry about. You're not going to take that time to assess the situation. You're immediately going to shoot onto this protection side. So this is where we had questions about cholesterol and blood pressure and all that beginning. The first, your nervous system picks up on this side of life. The first organ it's going to hit in the body is what?
Your brain.
Liver.
No. Your adrenals. There's these little tiny organs on the top of your kidneys. And what hormone sounds like adrenals?
Adrenaline.
Adrenaline, right. And what's adrenaline going to do to your cardiac output? What's going to happen to heart rate?
Your heart's going to be pumping.
It's going to be pumping. What about blood pressure?
It's going to go up.
Right. What about blood clotting factors?
Don't know.
If the bear gets you, do you want to bleed out or not?
Well, you hope your blood will clot.
Right. So yeah, your body will shoot towards more of a clotting favorable component, because they just in case, erring on the side of caution, if that bear gets you, I don't want to bleed out. I want to...
That'll actually happen, that even if you do things like take too many aspirin, your blood is thin.
Or warfarin.
That the blood actually kicks in some mechanism that'll coagulate faster.
Yes, but again, we'll get to this. So let's say,
independent of artificial ingredients,
heart rate, blood pressure's up, clotting. What about respiratory rate, breathing?
Increases.
Yeah. What about cholesterol?
Well, let's hope it goes.
Again, what's that question? What's the role of cholesterol? You have to, depends on what paradigm you're coming from. If you got a drug to sell, the paradigm is cholesterol is bad, you need to have it lowered.
What's the role of cholesterol in protection?
I think it's an agent that carries energy.
That's part of it, yes. So that'll go up because you need some energy going, running away from a bear.
Is that some type of glue?
Yes, it's basically the super glue that holds you together. It gives you three-dimensional shape. Another is it's the base of hormones. It's also the basis of a lot of our hormones. And you're going to have hormones that reside on this protection side, hormones that reside on the growth side. So estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, what side do you think those reside on? Are those growth hormones or are those...
Well, they're growth until they're not. Yeah. Certain age.
So your sex hormones. Cholesterol is the basis of those. Cholesterol is the basis of a protective hormone called cortisol. And what's that going to do to the body?
Doesn't cortisol have something to do with the brain function?
And joints.
Okay.
That's cortisone.
Right.
Say it again.
Does it create fat?
Indirectly. So it's going to release sugar into your blood system. If you don't use it, then eventually it's going to get stored back as fat. So cholesterol is the basis of this cortisol hormone that's going to save your life. It's going to give you the instant energy to escape that bear, to fight it, or to do whatever it needs to. You go to the list of your doctor with these symptoms, high heart rate, blood pressure, clotting, respiratory, high cholesterol. What are you walking out of the doctor's office with?
Medication. You got a sack full of pills.
Right. So they're going to give you...
Either that or a bear deflector.
Yeah. Some bear spray. They're going to give you probably a cholesterol-lowering drug, a blood thinner, and one to knock out your blood pressure. So now you feel better. Let's say you walk out of the doctor's office and another bear pops out in front of you. What's your chance of survival now that those are all artificially lowered?
Bleed on, bleed out.
Right. So you may feel better as the bear is gnawing on your arm. So what this does, what our healthcare system does, is it makes you feel better while you essentially die sooner. And that's not to be harsh, but look at the stats. As soon as you go on medication, what happens to your life insurance premiums if you're not already locked into a rate?
That's true.
They skyrocket because they know a shadow of a doubt you're a bigger risk to the company being on these medications. Sure. Same thing with your health insurance. As soon as you start using the system, they know, hey, you're a greater risk. We're going to jack up premiums. So this whole harmonious function of the whole person is basically how the nervous system is going to organize and coordinate life. And when there's something that interferes with it, which could be physical. So most of my day is adjusting people in the spine with this thing called a subluxation. That's a physical interference to the nervous system. It could be chemical interferences, like we're talking about medications. It could be emotional interferences, which we'll talk about some of those. It could be social and those types of toxins. Are you with me? All right. So here's the bear attack. Got ahead of myself.
He started out with his teeth.
Yeah. Exactly. So don't mess with them.
Yeah.
So the not so obvious toxic top 10. Any guesses what any of these 10 would be?
Well, sugar.
I think sugar's gonna be the number one.
Well, it's an obvious one.
Yeah.
So.
Salt. Okay. Salt.
All right.
Salt.
No, I don't have that on here.
You
don't?
Okay.
Really?
I just cut my salt up.
Mean thoughts.
Look, so when you say not stuff, so obvious, yeah. Are you wanting environmental factors? Are you wanting outside influences. I mean, I think
yeah.
this up here is a big toxin
yeah.
if
yep.
it's not
yeah.
thinking properly.
So without a specific, that's actually number one that I have.
Worry.
Yeah. Good for you. Goal star.
Yeah. Head of the class.
Worry is instantly going to shift you over towards protection mode. Like worry systematically shuts down growth, repair, those types of mechanisms in the body. The problem is that, at least how I deal with worry, and it might be just because I'm a guy and I'm in the analytical space, is I play risk assessment, risk analysis with what I'm worried about. So what's the worst case possible scenario if this situation goes through? It might be death. But then I look at what's the actual probability of that happening. So say I'm worried about driving in a rainstorm with lots of hail and lightning. I'm worried, hey, I might get hit with the lightning, which causes me to drive into a guardrail, flip over, and all this type of thing. Right, it's a possibility, but what's the probability? And then I start playing assessment with that. Then what's the next one?
Stress.
Like, so yeah, so with any worry, people with like public speaking, like...
Anxiety.
Right. Like, what's the stat of people actually dying from public speaking?
Only about 20%.
Yeah, so I got 80% success. No.
Depending on the country.
Yeah. So that's how I deal with worry. I think where we need to shift our focus when we're worried about something is because usually we're moving towards something where we have to take a risk. I'd rather you focus on what would happen if I didn't take that risk. What's the loss by not taking that risk? And usually that's a bigger loss than actually going through with what it has. So worry is number one. Not number one. Like these don't have a hierarchy of them.
But just the first one you thought of.
Just my first one, yes. Gossip.
Men never gossip.
Hey, don't talk to me.
No, you gotta think. So the definition like of gossip is discussing a problem with somebody that can't affect the outcomes. So if your boss is the meanest old man and all this type of thing, discussing that with the receptionist who can't affect the outcome of the specific problem, that's gossip. And that starts to spread through the organization. That's a toxin for that. It can be through families. Yeah, wife talking to sister-in-law about husband. Well, great, go straight to the husband. And I don't mean to pick on the guys, but like,
yeah.
The stereotype is women gossip more than guys, and just because we don't talk. We don't express anything, so.
Did you hear the one about the husband who wouldn't talk to his wife? Oh, good.
Yeah.
Huh?
Is worry and stress the same when you have a person?
Well, stress is too broad a category. Because stress can be anything, going back to our definition of toxin. So a stress can be anything that places a challenge on the physiological system. So stress could be, most times we equate it to emotion, to emotional type challenges, but it can be a physical one, was one of my toxic top 10. It could be a chemical thing. So a stress puts someone in a state of deficiency and or toxicity. So I would equate gossip the same stress load as eating a Big Mac, as sitting in a cubicle all day. Those are all stressors to our physiological system that will affect the harmonious function of the whole person. How that's expressed is going to be individual. So you may have the same set of stressors I do, or you may have a heart attack, I may have skin problems. Someone else might have cancer. Someone else might have arthritis. Someone else might have depression. How that's expressed is going to be individualized.
So worry and gossip are examples of things that create stress that will amplify themselves.
Right. So the stress is the effect of those. Because no one ever got, like, at least not me, I haven't gossiped about something and then I feel like super inspired after that. Like it's like eating the big pizza all in one sitting. Like it may seem enjoyable before and during, but never afterward. You're like, man, I feel amazing after doing that. I'm so glad I did that. It's always kind of a regret type of thing. And so with gossip, keep it in check. And if someone says, calls you out on it, don't get mad and then gossip behind their back that they're calling you out on it. Like, go to that person. Sitting. Sitting is a toxin. Unfortunately, you guys are sitting. But it was estimated 150 years ago, we spent 95% of our day on our feet. Today, 65% of our time is spent on our butt. And I just saw a stat today between 8 and 18 year olds, I think it was 85% of their day is spent not moving at all.
Wow. That's not my case.
No.
No, not you, Gary.
And that's the problem is we've set up workforces to sit all day. We have cubicles. We set up our school systems, sit down and don't say anything. And that deprives, that actually shifts the brain away from, so the growth side, the learning side, the cognitive side, shifts it away from that to a protection side.
Maybe Under Armour built butt shoes.
There's actually an initiative happening right now where this, I don't know, I guess you can call it a company, a nonprofit, whatever. They, in the next 10 years, they want to fit every school with a standing workstation.
I was going to say.
That's what I have at my office. I made a makeshift one. It's actually a closet organizer that I got at Lowe's. I can adjust the shelves up or down, and I can use the whole wall if I want to. I can expand onto it. But the only time I sit in my day is in my car ride to work and pretty much for meals. And it's phenomenal. At first, you're going to be very fatigued. When I first started that, yeah, I'd get home at night, sit down, and fall asleep within 20 minutes. But now my body's adapted to it, and I'm used to it. The problem is that it takes away play. Like play, the higher functioning animals are the ones that play more. So dogs, dolphins, you don't see turtles playing much. You don't see these slower movies. And so humans, they might. Maybe we have a definition of play, but.
Is age a factor?
As far as.
I mean, regardless of age, you think you gotta be moving, right? I mean,
yeah. There's a, it's called the Sachs Institute out of Australia. They've been tracking over 250,000 people, and I think it's over age 45. And for, I totally forgot my notes, but it was something that for every four more, I think it was like if you spent 11 hours or more inactive, like sitting or thing like that, you had a 40% more chance of dying in the next 4 years than people that were more active during that time. So. That was looking at people 45 and over.
That's really good. Yeah. I look beyond 50.
Yeah.
Okay. So that whole notion, movement is life, that wherever that proverb came from, the neurology of that is catching up to that statement made centuries ago, that movement is life. Mm-hmm. Chronic lateness. This is a toxin in my world, not because I'm guilty of it, but by the way it affects me when other people are chronically late. I don't know when it became acceptable, but late's not cute, it's selfish and rude. Like it's, and it doesn't put, that specific person might not feel the effects of it, but everyone else in the room. So let's say we're having a board meeting of 20 people, we're waiting on one person, they're 10 minutes late. That's not 10 minutes, that's 10 times the 20 people. They wasted 200 minutes. And so that's a toxin because now everyone else is on edge, they're starting late, productivity goes down, and it's ridiculous. I think one of the things in my practice that I'm very hyper aware of is I don't want people to wait very long. If they do, I expect them to walk out on me. In turn, I expect the same thing. If you're gonna keep me waiting, I'll probably give you a 15-minute window and then I'm moving on pretty quick. And so obviously it's not the once in a while, we all have hangups once here and there that are out of our controls, but when it's a a lifestyle pattern, essentially. To me, that's a toxin. Busyness is probably the reason why people are chronically late. And busy is a four-letter swear word in my office. Like, if you wanna, I'd rather have you spout out the F word to me than say you're busy. Do you know what the definition of busy is?
Oh, I used to know.
I don't know your definition.
Foolishly active. So when people say they're busy, I say you're right. You're doing a bunch of stuff, not accomplishing anything.
Actually, another definition is unable to prioritize.
Unable to prioritize, yeah, another good one. But somehow today it's become our new currency. How you doing? Oh, I'm busy. That means must mean you're very important. To me, it means you're not productive and you're not planning and you're not getting accomplished what you had set for. A kid is supposed to be busy. Like, I have a video, not here, but I just recorded the other day. I gave up after 5 minutes. It's my 18-month-old son trying to pop a balloon by just sitting on it. And so he's bouncing on it and he's falling off it and he's having a good old time. But I'm like, he's not accomplishing anything, and that's okay for a little kid. When people say we're busy, I get this mental image of them trying to pop a balloon by sitting on it, and it's not happening over and over and over and over again. So they get to the end of the day, and like, what the heck did I just accomplish? I'm running here, 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 and here, so I'm active, but not productive. Discouragement. I think this is a huge toxin. And I think people get discouraged because, well, they discouragement leads to loss of hope. And there's a saying, hope, well, if you backtrack, trials and tribulations lead to perseverance, perseverance to character, character to hope. And I think people get in this rut of the trials and tribulations and don't give it enough time, they don't work hard enough to build that perseverance, which then leads to character, leads to hope. And so because they're stuck in the trial, they lose the hope, and the discouragement sets in and kind of sets another snowball of not moving forward. And I think the discouragement stems from people not attaining what they had hoped for. And so what I think encourages me is like, okay, I haven't attained that, but I also haven't lost it yet. And what people do then is they hold on to what they either had or what they currently have. And most of that time, what they had or what they have is centered around something pain-based, usually pain-based emotionally. This is more gonna be the emotional type of thing. It could be physical too. Yeah, I'm not getting better, or I'm not losing the weight, or I'm not so-and-so, whatever it is, but give it time to build that perseverance, that character, that hope. And I think it's kind of cheesy, but I have a mentor who says the opposite of discouragement is encouragement. And all it is courage inside you trying to get out.
That's actually a nice sound, buddy.
We'll hope that recorded well then.
Yeah.
Entitlement. So, lots of smiles with that one. So what's your immediate thought when you hear entitlement?
Very negative.
Do you have a certain generation in mind?
Yes.
Who? Mine?
Gen X.
Just tonight, we had a couple of kids come to our door. We're at dinner. They come to the door. We're trying to get to London. Our parents challenged us to come up with ways to get to London. Would you like to make a donation? And I, what? You didn't ask if you could mow our lawn? Or do some labor.
Right. So entitlement is like a feeling of deservedness, if that's a word.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's just, you guys are pointing at my generation and younger, the millennials, the Gen X, Gen Y. And not to like, because there's more of you than me, don't gang up on me here, but I think it's sort of a learned behavior. And again, I look at this as the healthcare debate is who's paying for this? I'm entitled to this. I'm entitled to this. I'm entitled to this. Who's paying for it? Who's paying for it? Who's paying for it? And we already have that system called Medicare, where people have worked all their life and they expect this to be on their lap. They're expecting this to pay for this, this, and this. And if it doesn't, then there's frustration, there's discouragement, there's worry, there's gossip because they're discussing the problem with people that can't solve it. They sit around reading the news and all that, and then they're probably late for the thing that would actually get them better. And so I think entitlement is a huge toxin in our life. I don't know how to overcome it. Hopefully I teach my boys that get off their butt and work. Hopefully that comes across to them at 3.5 and 1.5. not too harshly, but firmly. So if you guys have any solutions on how to disrupt entitlement, then pass them along and I'll pass it to the next workshop I do.
I've heard it said that even though, you know, we're the generation that think this entitlement thing is bad, but we're the ones who actually taught our, you know, allowed our children to do, to not work maybe or have this, that, or the other. I mean, we're the culprits in a lot of that.
Yeah. And I don't mean to put the blame on that generation, but
ourselves,
Yeah. So maybe that's the solution, is to analyze internally and
well, the biggest problem probably is computers, games, well, type thing. Kids don't have the opportunity to grow like probably my generation. Because we had things to do. It, you know, we didn't expect anything over the average living, I guess. I mean, nowadays, kids think 2 days after they start a new job, they want to be the foreman. You know, I think if they just feel because they have 4 years of school, that's how I feel about it. If they go to college and they think, okay, now I want to be an executive the next day, it doesn't always work that way, that's how,
And when it does, it's a disaster.
Yeah, it's a disaster. I mean, I've worked in a different environment lately.
Do you think it may have originated with good intent, meaning like, You always want your kids to be more successful and have more opportunity, and so providing that has now created a different problem than a gratitude and I don't know, more a sense of pride opposed to a sense of deservedness.
I mean, I think the 4 years of college is very good, don't get me wrong, but I just think that it goes beyond that. I think it has with the school or with the degree, you should have a certain amount of training with the people and know your, you know, the people around you and get personal, you know. I just think we've lost so much of that, part of the entitlement.
Well, I think you hit it on the nose too when you say gratitude, you know, just being grateful as opposed to I need to make more than you or
yes, right.
Be that gratitude. I think that's taught at home though. That's modeled and taught at home.
Is ingratitude on your list?
No, but that's probably a point I could have made back in worry, is if you, like, remember, you can't be in protection and growth at the same time. So if you're worried, how to break that cycle is the easiest one, at least, is through gratitude. And say, pretty much with all these, except sitting, like. So you mentioned sugar as being a toxin. I kind of take it a step further and say insulin, because it's kind of a double-edged sword. So if we go back to our bear attack here, so we have cortisol, that has a role of dumping sugar into the bloodstream for instant energy. If you're not going to use that energy, so let's say you're in your car, you just got cut off in traffic and you can't get out and beat the snot out of the guy who cut you off, which physiologically is actually the right thing to do, socially the wrong thing to do. This sugar has to be stored somehow. And that's where insulin's jobs come in. So insulin's actually over on this side. So it's a growth hormone. So it's going to store nutrients. So it's going to be what we call anabolic. So think Arnold Schwarzenegger back in his heyday on anabolic steroids. The problem, again, remember, you can't be in protection and growth at the same time. So if there's a bear, there's a perceived danger, what one's your body going to listen to?
Protection?
Yeah. So, we actually become insulin resistant. When this process of sugar always coming out, whether it's you ingesting it, eating it, drinking it, or the physiology of it coming out, and the continued process of insulin being released, eventually your cell's like, hey, I'm sick of listening to insulin. I'm going to shut that communication off. So insulin actually becomes a toxin in your body. The problem with that is insulin is not just an anabolic hormone, it's also a mitogenic. So you remember mitosis in biology, where one cell becomes two and grows? So then insulin, which is still circulating, will target tissues that are least resistant to it and start making those cells divide more rapidly than normal. If cells are dividing more rapidly than normal and desired and programmed, what do we usually call that? What illness?
Probably cancer.
Right, cancer. So insulin resistance is going to be a huge component in cancer. The immune system is going to be affected by insulin because it's going to shift. If you're running from a bear, are you worried about catching a cold? No. So your immune system gets imbalanced. Can't fight off what it needs to very efficiently. Think of muscles. We have calcium to make muscles contract. We have magnesiums to make them relax. Restless leg, chronic fatigue, all those type of conditions have an insulin resistance component because insulin helps regulate magnesium. So if your muscles can't relax and let go, then it's in this constant fight and go and protective mode. So the better you can regulate insulin, and again, that's not a huge component, it's going to be through what you eat and diet and all that, but your emotions are going to have it. Not moving enough is going to influence it. But the more you can regulate insulin, the better lifespan, quality, quantity of life that you're going to have. They actually use insulin with most other species as a predictor of mortality. So if they can regulate it well, great. They're probably going to be healthy. If they're not regulating it, you're probably going to die off sooner. And we're looking at cognitive function with Alzheimer's. They're calling that now type 3 diabetes. So an insulin resistance of the brain. Isolation. It's a toxin. Humans are pack animals. The more we do, obviously the introvert, extrovert, all those types of things, that's how we recharge, not a bad thing. But we hide behind computer screens, we hide behind fake profiles, we hide behind whatever it is, and we can communicate with more people ever in the history of the world, yet we're more isolated than any time in the history of the world. And then we need a vacation, which makes us isolate more to escape our current isolation. I'll never get that. So when we go on vacation, we actually go with a ton of people. We probably have more community on our vacations than we do in our real life. And then the 10th, apathy. And I think apathy is probably an effect of the rest of these 9. Especially discouragement, because you don't get to that point. You get to the point where, like, I just don't care. And I know everyone has their specific cause, they have their certain hot buttons, but for me, if we're apathetic about our health, that's probably the most detrimental toxin that you can be to not just you, but that's going to affect other people as well, especially the closest loved ones. Because I get it all the time. Wife comes in, I really want my husband to see you. I want him to do this. But he doesn't care. And it's affecting her more than it's affecting the individual, because they care about that person and they can't move, they can't shift that mindset to take some action and do something. So I've made it easy to take action. And so part of those sheets, the one underneath the note-taking sheet, is a way to take action.
Everybody's religiously used.
Yeah. Exactly.
I wrote down all 10.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Exactly. So action steps can be small, they can be encouraging, and one action step is just get on my newsletter And with that, you get my 7-day jump start. So totally free to you. It's just a, you can email every day for 7 days with an action step. And again, some might not be obvious. Day one is actually just gratitude. So let's break these not so obvious toxic top 10 with some mindset shift to get you going for the rest of things that will happen. Some of these toxins I can't address. I don't have the training to do that, the psychology and all that, but I can address usually the physical effects of that. So these toxins are gonna be like a hurricane. I can't stop a hurricane, but I can rebuild the damage that's after that.
You can board the windows.
Yeah. And so you might have questions. I know people don't like to ask questions in group settings that often. So if you have questions, you can do a 15-minute consult, no charge to you. If you're like, hey, I know I'm gonna need more than that, 60-minute, let's sit down one-on-one in office. And probably the best way to impact the community is if you have other groups, if you have other clubs or whatever, you need a speaker, I'm open and willing. I'm finding this is one of my passions to do. I'm a lab rat by design, but would have probably gone nuts if I had down that career, because I do need that interaction. Even though I'm an introvert by nature, this actually helps recharge me. I'd rather speak to a group of people than small talk mingle with a couple of people. So any questions, any comments, any clarifications needed?
Yeah, I've got one. When will insurance companies and Medicare recognize services like yours equally with all the pill-pushing charlatans?
Probably not in my lifetime. Services like mine doesn't have the lobby money to influence that policy decision making.
Should it? Should it change?
Oh, absolutely. But I'm okay with insurance not being that, because then that, I think that creates more entitlement on providers, like, hey, we should be covered. I would like to see insurance go from, like, our health insurance industry is, it's a unicorn. Like, if you look at your car insurance, your house insurance, anything like that, you can't purposely abuse whatever you're insuring and then expect to get recovered for it. Like, if you love the smell of a campfire, you can't put a bonfire in the middle of your house, let it burn down, and be like, hey, now repay me for this. Be like, no, you're the idiot that burned your own house down. We're not going to repay that. Or you're not calling up your auto insurance and be like, I need some new tires, or can you fill up my gas tank for me? Like, there's a maintenance, there's a responsibility aspect to it. For some reason, health insurance went from catastrophic emergencies to now we'll cover a hangnail and do everything possible. So again, you don't feel, it will numb you to the fact as you continue to destroy your own thing. So I think there has to be I'm surprised the insurance companies haven't done that. Like, they see how much money they're fitting for quadruple bypass surgeries and be like, look, if we can do measures to prevent this, we could save ourselves millions of dollars with just a few cases. So I don't know if that's ever going to shift.